are continuing with our week of trying to talk with as many candidates vying under the assembly process this coming Saturday as we can. Of course, yesterday we had Steve House. Tomorrow we've got Scott Gessler. And this morning I'm very glad to finally be able, it's been a while, to talk with former Colorado Senate Minority Leader, Republican Mike Kopp, who is also running for governor and joins us now. Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Jimmy, I'm great. Thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to talk to you. And I'm wondering, did you see the story in the Post this morning about Hickenlooper's staffing overhaul costing millions?
No, I'm glad you brought this to my attention. It's a rare day when I don't get both the Wall Street Journal and Denver Post looked at and read, but morning was a different story with kids and duties to school. So you'll have to catch me up.
Well, yes, absolutely. See, that's the thing that people have to understand is you candidates are still parents, or you're still working. So, you know, in addition to going on the campaign trail, I'll just give you the headline that the governor has hired a net increase of more than 300 at-will employees between November 2012 and January of this year. I'm sorry to the listeners. I said January of last year. I meant January of this year, costing $21 million in what under the past 2012 Amendment S was supposed to be a revenue or expenditure neutral, cost neutral. So in other words, the governor hired in just over a year more than 300 at-will employees, and they're also reporting about increased staff that were contributors to his campaign. So obviously you haven't seen the story, so you can't comment too much on it. I understand that. But those are some of the basic headlines that the Denver Post is surprisingly reporting, that at a cost of $21 million, Governor Hickenlooper dramatically increased the at-will workforce of the executive branch. Just knowing that on the surface, what do you react?
Well, actually, it's not new. It's not surprising. This is what the Ritter administration did. This is what the administration has done too. And if you just look back at the last 3 years since John Hickenlooper took office, we've seen government growth in double digits, but we've seen private sector growth and employment growth continue to falter. Household income is down across the state, $6,000 per household on average over the last three and a half years since John Hickenlooper's been in office. 87,000 more people on food stamps now than were on food stamps the day that he came to office. And yet you see this kind of growth on the government side. And, you know, my feeling about it is this. The government has a limited function for society. And the only authority that the government has to govern is given by the people, right? This incredible phrase in the Declaration, the consent of the governed. And yet, the governed are the very ones feeling like they are now the servant to this master called government, because it wants more, it's taking more, it's constantly making itself bigger. The tax bills are going up, the costs are going up. And the regulations and all the rules and all the entanglements that government does so well at creating, those things are becoming more compounding and all-encompassing. As I've gone around the state over the last several months, Jimmy, I've asked this question many times, and I don't do it in kind of a trick way. I say, look, I got a serious question for you, and I'll ask this to a group of people. Do you feel more empowered in your personal lives, more free in your personal lives, since John Hickenlooper and Bill Ritter have been in office, or less so? And the response is actually more powerful than you think it is. It's revulsion almost. I mean, people are feeling this. So when government grows, it's doing what it does, doing what Thomas Jefferson predicted it would do. And the only way to get this thing under control is to have clear-eyed leadership with a plan that can push it back. And that's part of my plan. It's been my plan the whole time. It's what I did while I worked in the state Senate.
I'm amazed, Mike Kopp, our guest candidate for governor, that you're saying here that household income has gone down $6,000 under the Hickenlooper administration. And yet, according to this Denver Post report, salaries jumped more than 91% over total at-will salaries in 2012. It jumped from $31.4 million to $59.5 million for the period. So a dramatic increase in salaries and hiring, while hiring has remained relatively stagnant in the state, and there has been a decline in household income. What does that really tell you about not just the mentality of government, which you addressed somewhat, but also sort of the direction that John Hickenlooper has been heading in that kind of follows in the footsteps, as you appropriately pointed out, of Bill Ritter? Mike?
I lost you there for a second. I'm not sure why.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you okay. Sorry about that. Basically, what I was saying is that there was a 91% jump in executive branch salaries from $31.4 million to $59.5 million for the period, as well as all of those jobs being hired in government, while across the state people are struggling, as you pointed out, $6,000 going right down in household income. You talked about sort of the broader notion of government, but what does that tell you about Governor John Hickenlooper and the way that he's trying to run his administration?
Well, the governor, I sat in the chamber, in the House chamber, when the governor made his first State of the State address. It was maybe 40 or 50 feet from him when he was sworn into office and gave his inaugural address on the west steps of the Capitol. And this took us to the state, and he said, "I'm going to do everything I can to streamline government, to make it more efficient. I'm going to cut red." My number one job here, I don't use the word, the exact phrase number one, but my concern here, the employers in the state growing, make it easier business here, make it easier for them to hire people and bring people on. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but it's no secret. Everybody knows John Hickenlooper's message to the voting public was that, you know, I'm not a politician. I'm kind of a middle-of-the-road guy. Really not that partisan, and yet this is an administration with probably even a more liberal and more progressive big government agenda than that of his predecessor in Governor Bill Ritter, who really made no such extravagant claims like that. The fact of the matter is, if you don't have a leader that is casting a clear vision and a clear agenda for the state government in that governor's office, you're going to this, because the national tendency and bureaucracy to grow.
Mike Kopp, I hate to cut you off, but you are cutting in and out a little bit there. Can you give us a call back and get off, and let's try and see if we can strengthen that connection here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show? Our guest is Mike Kopp, and he's absolutely right. This is a governor who has stated time and time again that he's bipartisan, that he doesn't want to be some sort of left-winger through and through, that he wants to reach across the aisle, work with Republicans, just like President Obama made the exact same claims. And then the way that they actually govern is a very different story. The way in which they actually govern is in one where there is political partisanship and bias and patronage and a whole swath of issues, difficulties, and challenges that we now face as a state and as a people as a result of these decisions of government. From people who claim not to want to politicize issues, to not be partisan, to handle governing matters in a way that is conducive to getting things done. We're going to take a quick break here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show so we can give a second to reconnect with Mike Kopp, see if we can get a better signal there. As we continue on the program, when we come back, we're going to talk about his vision. He said we need somebody who's got a real vision for Colorado and the state. We will get to Mike Kopp's vision right on the other side as we continue the Jimmy Sangenberger Show on the Velocity Radio Network. We'll be joined once again in a moment by Mike Kopp, former Colorado Senate Minority Leader, working on some connectivity issues there. In the meantime, I want to continue with discussing the Colorado and what is happening in this state, because it is very interesting. There is a bill that there's been attempts to get through several different times, particularly pushed by Senator Scott Renfro, who's one of four candidates vying for Congressional District 4's nomination to replace Cory Gardner. Congressional District 4 includes Castle Rock. There's a bill that he proposed a few different times to make illegal red light cameras, banishing them in Colorado. And now it's actually gaining traction after a bipartisan group in the state legislature reached consensus on the controversial devices. A proposal introduced in the Senate last week would bar cities and counties from using automated vehicle identification systems that pinpoint drivers committing traffic violations. Mark Ferrandino, so Renfro's a Republican. Mark Ferrandino is a Democrat, and he's the Speaker of the House. And he's also the bill's prime House sponsor. And he says these red light cameras just create revenue for cities and don't actually increase public safety at our intersections. I think we should be focused on making people safe, not raising money. He said he's long supported the legislation, though it's never made it out of the Senate. Earlier this year, he approached Renfro about being the House sponsor and helping to back the measure. And, each year, Denver Post reporting here that the city governments across the state raking hundreds of thousands of ticket dollars, so millions of dollars in revenue as a result, in large part, of these red light tickets. In particular, last year, Denver handed out about 35,000 red light photo tickets and nearly 195,000 speeding photo tickets, according to officials. Combined, the city made about $7.8 million on the infractions. And so there's now starting to become a consensus among people that these are harmful. And I hope that this bill does make its way through the legislature all the way. All the way through the Senate and through the House, especially with the Speaker behind it, because I'm very much on board. All right, we have Mike Kopp, former State Senate Minority Leader and Republican candidate for governor, back on the line with us. And Mike, the last thing that you mentioned that really stuck out to me was the notion that we need to have a governor who has a clear and consistent vision for the state of Colorado. What is the Mike Kopp vision for Colorado, both in the short term and in the long term, whether it's policy, whether it's outcomes, what have you? What's your vision for Colorado?
Jimmy, thanks for bearing with me. I guess that's what happens when you're a candidate out on the road all the time.
Absolutely.
Well, it's an excellent question, and the fact of the matter is there's this great leadership quote that I've been drawn to for years, and it says this: in the absence of great dreams, pettiness prevails. And so another way to look at that is if you don't have a clear guiding vision that animates people inside your agencies and inside the administration, and even inside the legislature, and then, of course, across the state, you have exactly the kind of situation that you've got going on right now, where the agency heads are growing their departments. Things appear to be running fairly unchecked, and the fact is you have to have a guiding vision on day one when you get into office, because you're going to be confronted with all kinds of different challenges and issues that are going to face you. And if you don't have a clear, cogent, compelling, unifying vision to drive to and to point everybody to, you're just going to be lost. And so for me, the whole agenda of the next governor needs to be around this central piece. We need a governor who will empower people and not the government. And so in order to do that, you have to take specific action steps. So I've got a whole series of action steps. It takes a fair amount of time to walk through, but it really is comprised in four critical pieces. First,
sure,
grow the economy based on low taxes and low spending. You lead with the veto pen. You tell the legislature on day one, colleagues, some of you may like this and some of you may not like this, but the fact of the matter is I'm serving in office on behalf of the taxpayers of the state. So if you send me bills that make it more difficult for me to give them rebates under the taxpayer protections of the Constitution, I'm putting your bill in the veto pile.
Wait. You're telling me that the governor is empowered to veto bills?
It's actually spelled V-E-T-O, and it's something that we ought to unearth here. You know, I've heard some of my opponents in this race say, well, the governorship is a fairly weak one. And it really is not a weak one. And somebody who says that, I think, misunderstands the powers vested in the office of governor through the Constitution.
Well, and I want to underscore that point about the veto pen, because there have been very few bills, and particularly they've shown up in this session where the Democrats are trying to moderate themselves, and still very few, where the governor has actually used that veto pen, especially on onerous regulations. I mean, he's got a pen just like President Obama. Why doesn't he use it?
Well, that's right, and I just want to underscore this point too, to use a word you just used, and that is, if you don't draw the terms of the debate going forward, then you have no public accountability, and I'm talking about in the office of governor. You have no public accountability. You just take things on as they come. That's not leadership. That's being reactive. That's trying to go along and get along. That's trying to find shades of gray so you can finesse issues as they come your way. My clear, compelling, guiding agenda is going to be to drive an agenda that gets more freedom, creates more opportunity and more freedom and more individual empowerment for the people of the state. And you can do that pretty powerfully through the veto pen. But it really isn't enough just to stop there. We need a governor who will go beyond just saying no. We do need a governor who will veto things. But if you think about the overreaches that have taken place in these last 7 years, 7.5 years now, we need a governor who can actually build a coalition within the legislature and within his own agencies, give direction, clear direction to his own agency heads, to go back and begin to unwind all of these infringements and all of these restrictions placed on the people of the state of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I've gone around the state and I asked this question: do you feel more empowered? Do you feel like you have more freedom in your life? And people don't, and they truly have embraced this notion that the government is bigger and it's just the way it's going to be now, unless somebody has a clear, compelling approach to fighting back.
Mm-hmm.
So that means we need to open up things like the business personal property tax. We need to get rid of it. Create a plan to get rid of it and get rid of it. There are a lot of different ways that you could skin that cat, and we should do that because it's a tax, it's an annual tax, on the very equipment that businesses in the state of Colorado use to make money. Another powerful, speaking of this issue of growing a booming economy, another powerful place of influence the governor could choose to have, but unfortunately he is not, that is guiding the conversation around energy. You put agency heads in that are actually in favor of going after the resources that we have here in the state, not that want to place more strictures on it. You tell the legislature, if you cook up these backroom deals to, you know, these crony capitalist deals in the back room to favor one energy sector, of course I'm speaking of the renewable energy sector here, at the expense of ratepayers in the state, I'm going to veto that bill. That's not how we're going to do business. Secondly, we need a governor. You asked me about my plan, and so the first has everything to do with setting a low tax and low spending expectation and driving to that agenda. But secondly, we need a governor who will actually have a plan that he can execute on day one to cut government down to size, and specifically in two areas. We've got a regulatory burden being placed on our businesses that is just growing and growing. I heard one lady the other day tell me it's like being a mummy wrapped in all of this red tape from John Hickenlooper. You know, the governor said, I'm going to cut red tape. Well, as a matter of fact, in 2012 alone, just that 1 year, his administration adopted 14,000 pages of new regulations. And my belief is that most of those pages of regulations are lost opportunities, killed jobs, pay raises that aren't going to happen, businesses that aren't going to expand and invest and create more opportunities and jobs here in the state of Colorado. And that hurts our kids. That hurts those 200,000 people trying to find meaningful work and trying also to get off of the welfare rolls. So my plan, it's called Blueprint for a Leaner Government. It calls for a very thorough multi-disciplinary process, and we go through every single regulation in a period of 2 years with the goal of driving down the cost of being a regulated business by 25% in those 2 years.
And how do you measure? How are those statistics measured in terms of the cost of regulation? Do you know how that's exactly done?
Yeah. Well, one of the problems with regulation is there are no real measures. You know, the fact of the matter is it is such a big, confounding mess. It's like trying to find the other end of a piece of spaghetti and a big bowl of spaghetti. So you have to create measures. That is why I've created this measure. So the only real way to do it is for each industry to understand what their cost of compliance is. And they're the ones that are helping guide the conversation with the government. You know, the way that regulations normally work is legislators, they get together and they draft up this bill and they pass the bill and it's signed into law. And then it directs the agencies run by the governor to create rules pursuant to the bill. And so, you know, there's a saying, one page of legislation gives 10 pages of, creates 10 pages of regulations. You know, nobody can possibly quantify all of the ways that our business environment here, and freedom, for that matter, more fundamentally, is being harmed by this tidal wave of new regulations year after year after year. And so what happens is the legislature goes to work, the regulators go to work, and then the businesses are asked to come in and comment on them. Well, what if we turn it around? What if instead of asking them to comment after the fact, what if we bring the businesses in and the question starts essentially like this. Help us understand where we are regulating you poorly, where we can drive down the cost of your compliance burden in your industry. And our goal is to do that by 25%. And there are people in each industry that can help us do that. Now, everybody's going to agree that we're going to keep certain regulations in place, obviously. Colorado has a very strong ethic, for example, of being responsible with the environment. But that doesn't mean that we're going to shut down operations for oil and gas exploration, just as an example, as so many in the Democratic Party would like to do. But the fact is, you have to create a measure. I'm willing to do that. I'm the only one in the race that has been willing to do that. And my goal is 25%. So my success will be measured on whether we can create 25% savings for those businesses in the state.
Now, how about in terms of cutting government waste, and not just waste, but also trying to scale back? I mean, we've got one of these key issues and difficulties, and we'll get to education fully in just a moment, but education eats up so much of the budget, so does Medicaid. Both of those programs leaving very little room for other areas, and their cuts do have to happen in order to constrain government. I just talked about $21 million being spent on 300 new employees hired by the governor over the course of just over a year, and you can look at any other different agencies and departments. What would a Mike Kopp administration do when it comes to cutting government waste and inefficiencies, but also programs that maybe just aren't necessary?
Well, I'm glad you asked. The other part of my plan, the blueprint, it's called the Blueprint for a Leaner Government. One half of it deals with the regulatory burden, and it drives it down so that we can reinvigorate the entrepreneurial spirit here in the state of Colorado and to put more money on the bottom line of the businesses that want to hire people, get them off of the welfare rolls, and give them hope and opportunity here. But the second part of the bill is huge, and it's at least as large in scope as the first, and that deals with exactly the state's bureaucracy. My plan, again, it's called Blueprint for a Leaner Government. I drafted this in 2010. The Denver Business Journal called it the most comprehensive in 50 years. So you go through, the plan calls for going through every single function of government, every one of them. And again, it'll be about a two-year process. We go through each of them.
That's right.
We pull out a function of government, and we compare that function against a set of values. Is this something that... Is this a program that has already run its course, for example? We don't ever ask that question.
Is this a program the government should even be involved in?
That's exactly right. You do it in an open public environment so that these programs have to stand up to public scrutiny. And when you expose some of these things to the lights of day, they simply can't. But there's no real mechanism to systematically expose them to the light of day, examine them, keep the ones that are good, fix the ones that are useful and helpful and constitute some core function of government, but you get rid of the rest. You know, there's another question that you should ask. We don't, systematically at least, and that is this a program that another layer of government is now doing? Or is this something that the nonprofit sector could do or the private sector could realistically do? And if the answer to any of those is yes, then you've created a roadmap for yourselves that can stand up to public scrutiny, that can get the support of legislators in the General Assembly, irrespective of the makeup, and you proceed with driving down the cost, size, complexity of government. Mm-hmm. I don't just want to streamline government. I'm talking about something much more transformational than that, because our government is too big, and it isn't just a Republican talking point to want to drive down the cost, size, complexity of government. It is, in fact, a roadmap to creating more freedom and more opportunity for the citizens of the state of Colorado. And you can't do it without a plan. I've got a plan. It will work. I'll need help. I'll need people's help to get on the ballot, and so I can execute this plan.
Right.
But it's time that we get it done, and we can do this work.
We've got just a few minutes left with our guest candidate for governor, Mike Kopp, former minority leader of the Colorado State Senate. I do want to ask you real briefly about education, because I think that that is a huge winning issue for Republicans, especially based on the reform outcomes of the last November election, as well as the 2-1 downfall of Amendment 66. What do you think needs to be done to improve education in Colorado and also be able to make it more efficient in terms of the cost that we spend, given how much of the budget it eats up?
Well, I'll start with your second question first, and that is around the cost. The purpose for doing this exercise, the blueprint for a leaner government over the period of 2 years, is to make huge, significant structural changes in the way that we govern ourselves. So we drive down the cost. We get back to just the core functions. We get rid of all of the functions of government that we should have never been involved with in the first place. They cost people money. More importantly, they cost people opportunity and freedom. Then you have a government that is pared down and leaned down, and it can focus itself more exclusively on just what are the core functions of government. You mentioned education as one, road building and widening our roads and making safe roads and fixing our bridges and things is another core function. But before we even contemplate doing other things to add additional revenue through taxation, which I am absolutely adamantly opposed to, you would have to, in good faith, go through a process like I'm talking about. So that's critical that you do that in the first place. In the second place, you know, you asked about where we need to go in education. I am a champion of what is taking place in Douglas County and what is taking place in Jefferson County. Local control matters. It makes a big difference. So as governor, if you're setting the agenda and you're using the bully pulpit at every single opportunity to push these decisions about standards and student learning and accountability and financing and all of these things, you push them to the local communities. Nobody cares for our kids more than parents. And parents, then, if they have an opportunity to be involved in their local community through their school board and the elections and the accountability councils and things like that, if it's a real meaningful opportunity, parents will move the dial out of concern for their children. You know, I've got four kids. They've all gone through Jefferson County public schools. They've all benefited from choice schools. As a matter of fact, three of my kids have gone through what has historically been one of the top 25 high schools in the country, and it's a free charter school here in Jefferson County. So local control matters. Choice and competition, those matter terrifically. I'm a supporter of going down the road of vouchers, especially for kids that are in failing schools. We should get those kids out of those schools as soon as possible. And I'll say another, just kind of a general point about my outlook on education. You know, there's no single factor that impacts the learning of our kids, more than the teacher and the quality of that teacher. Mm-hmm. We should be able to pay good teachers more money, teachers that are just killing it and raising excellence in our kids academically, but the unions won't let us do it. And we also ought to make it a whole lot easier to let go the bad teachers, the teachers that are failing our kids. That is such a central, critical component in our education system. And just making a change like that at the local level would make a pretty dramatic
difference. Certainly. I mean, there's nothing that can make a bigger difference in a child's educational life than a quality teacher. And I'd love to delve in more with that, but we are just about out of time. So I want to ask you, before we let you go and give you a chance to give your website address as well, I want to ask you about the politics of this Saturday. We are looking out into the assembly. I had not heard anywhere else, supposedly according to Steve House yesterday when he was on this program, he reported that Tom Tancredo is going through the assembly, even though he had been petitioning on and had said he wouldn't go through the assembly. I don't know if you've heard the same thing, but what I had heard prior to that was basically kind of looking at an outlook that there was sort of a front runner there in Scott Gessler, and you've got five people at least going through the assembly process. I'm wondering where you see things looking and headed this Saturday at the assembly, and how you feel about the possibility of Mike Kopp getting on the ballot.
Well, I'll tell you, to your first question, I don't know if Tom will go or not. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't change my game plan. And I'll tell you this, the clear fact is, my campaign has been surging for months now. I feel very good about our prospects on Saturday. I think we're going to show very well. Our calls and our direct voter contact have been going exceptionally well, and you need 30% to get on the ballot. I'm confident that we're going to wind up in that position. And any of the delegates that are listening now, I would just encourage you to support Mike Kopp, and you can find out more at colorado4kopp.com. If you're unfamiliar with my name, for whatever reason, the last name is K-O-P-P, so it's colorado4kopp.com.
Being a delegate myself, I have no idea how anybody could not at this point, who is a delegate, know how to spell Mike Kopp. But thank you for making that clear. Colorado4kopp.com, and four is spelled out. Mike, I look forward to seeing you on Saturday. Best wishes, and we'll talk to you down the line.
It'll be great. Thanks so much, Jimmy. Take care.
All right. Mike Kopp, former Colorado Senate minority leader for the Republicans at Colorado4kopp.com. Thank you so much for joining us for that interview. We will come back and shift gears to a few national topics and issues. There is a lot to discuss, especially including the president's hypocrisy when it comes to supposed equal pay for equal work. We'll be right back with that and more on the other side in the second hour of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show.